So we are discussing, by helping the world, we are helping ourselves. Is it a true statement? Yes, absolutely. And why and how? First, Swami Vivekananda is saying here, this world was not made that you or I should come and help it. Apparently, this is a very beautiful sentiment. But is it not a blasphemy to say that the world needs our help? We cannot deny that there is much misery in it. To go out and help others is therefore the best thing we can do, although in the long run we shall find that helping others is only helping ourselves. Then why should we do good to others? Why should we help others? So Swamiji says, the only help is that we get moral exercise. Now this is a beautiful way of putting it. If you do exercise, who gets the benefit? Does the gymnasium get the benefit? You get the benefit, I get the benefit. So if we are moral, and that is one of the best ways of helping others, is that we get a moral exercise. Morally, we become strong. What does it mean? What does it mean that morally we become strong? Our mind becomes so pure, so clear. We feel happier. We feel fulfilled. I will come to this topic in a greater detail very soon. But what is most important and which we all experience every minute of our life is the world appears to us according to the state of our mind. You get up in the morning and you feel very well. Look at the world, it is beautiful. Get up grousy, complaining, and the whole world, even if the sun is shining, then it appears to be very bad. This is an absolute truth. Because the world is nothing but a reflection of our own minds. This is a hard fact for us to understand and much difficult to accept, even after understanding. Intellectually, sometimes we do. Very difficult to accept it. But this is what in practice we are trying to do all the time, to accept the world as ourselves. Again, I will come to that point very soon. Swamiji is saying here, life is good or evil according to the state of mind in which we look at it. It is neither by itself. An example, fire by itself is neither good nor evil. When it keeps us warm, we say, how beautiful is fire. When it burns our fingers, we blame it. Still in itself, it is neither good nor bad. According as we use it, it produces in us the feeling of good or bad. So also is this world. It's perfect. What is the meaning of perfection? Swamiji has given one of the most marvelous definitions of perfection. By perfection is meant that it is perfectly fitted to meet its ends. Means it doesn't require anybody's help. It can look after itself perfectly well. Yet we must do good. The desire to do good is the highest motive power we have if we know all the time that it is a privilege to help others. This motive of helping others is only a good motive, only when we know that it's a privilege to help other people. So now I will come into some very interesting details. First of all, what does it mean, help? What does the word help means? You see, if I ask you the question, that do you take light into the outside when the sun is shining? Do you take a torch outside? Only when it is dark, you take a torch, isn't it? So, the word help means that somebody is helpless and needs your help, is it not? What is it usually? Usually, it means suffering, some kind of pain, whether it is human being or animal or anything, there is some kind of suffering is there. So, if I can go and put my finger, maybe I can help the person or the animal or whatever a little bit. But the question we have to ask is suffering really bad? Most of us do not stop to think whether it is suffering is really good or bad. And most of us instinctively say suffering is bad. Why is it bad? Because you see, no creature wants to suffer. How do we know? Because I do not want to suffer at any time. Not even a little bit. I do not want to suffer. Suppose I can bring up my children without suffering. Suppose there is an option. You have children. You can bring up your children without suffering. Or there is no other way. You have to suffer in course of bringing up your children. If you are not, of course, given a choice, the question of freedom doesn't come. But suppose there is a choice is there, which one do you adopt? Suppose you can, you know, there's a lot of good wives are there. Suppose you can please your husbands without entering into the kitchen. Would you not opt for that? So, here comes the question. First of all, is suffering bad? No, suffering is always good because suffering makes us sit up, take notice and do something about it. Sometimes happiness is not good. Let me give you one example also. The world doesn't need our help, but sometimes when we see somebody suffering and if you actively go and help that person, you may be doing the greatest harm. For example, a murderer is pursuing somebody and wants to kill. And unfortunately, the murderer is a little bit weak. And he is suffering from hunger and thirst. And you see him in that condition and invite him, poor man, you are suffering very much. Come in and have good food and have a good drink, have a good rest. What do you think you are doing? So, many times it is like that. You know why? So many people, if they do not do bad things, if they do not drink, if they do not visit nightclubs, if they do not take to evil ways, what we call evil ways, bad things, I think they are quite capable of doing much better than what they are doing now. At least I can tell you, in India, You go into some villages or even slum areas in cities and you feel pity for their wretched condition. They do not have good homes and maybe they are eating very coarse type of food. You take pity. But you just stand aside, look at their lives, see how much the husband is earning and how much he is spending in drinking at the evening. Do you know that? You know? There was a man was going in a street and he was looking very bedraggled and weak and all, emaciated and all that. So he came running and then came, "Sir, sir, I have not eaten for 3 days. See, will you kindly give me £5? I can have some good meals." So this man felt great pity. He took out £5 and put it in the hands of this beggar, tramp. And said, "Look, don't gamble it away." The man said, "No, sir. See, for gambling, I have separately money here." There are many people, if they really lead a good life, I am sure they can better their conditions. In other ways also, they may not be doing bad things, but do they use their life in proper creative ways, if every student studies well, if every doctor treats his patient well, if every lawyer is good and all that, do you think there will be so much of misery and trouble in this world? No. So supposing you feel pity for those people, suppose you help a lazy fellow, what do you think you are doing? You are only increasing that fellow's laziness. This is an argument. But there is a more important law that nobody can be helped until that person is ready to receive the help. This applies in spiritual field, in moral field, and also in physical field. Suppose somebody's stomach is bad. Naturally, you know, person is getting weaker. Do you think that by giving food, you will be able to help the person? Even if you give the best of food, the person will not be able to use it. He cannot digest it. So, these two points we have to remember, that suffering is not bad, and on the contrary, I would say, suffering is one of the best things that can happen to us. Secondly, until a person is ready to receive help, help cannot be given. You can give, but it just goes waste. Now comes an important point. Why is Swamiji telling that it is by helping others, you only are helping yourselves? Let me give you a simple example, or put a question to you. Supposing you are in a very dire condition. If nobody comes to your help, you are about to die. And somebody comes along at that time, takes you up, and then he gives you your life as it were back to you by looking after you. Right? Now, my question to you would be, how long should you be grateful to that person? And how much can you pay back to that person and say, see, this is what you have done, and this is what I am doing to you. We are square. I do not owe you anything. You do not owe me anything. Can anybody repay, even somebody saves our life, can anybody repay that life-giving help? Even in the whole of life, is it possible? Right. Now, we are all born so helpless. Is it not? We are as it were debtors. If our parents, out of affection, out of love, did not care for us, not one day, not for 2 days, but year after year, do you think we would have survived? Would any creature survive in this world without its parents' help? What I am trying to say, the point is, even by our very birth, we are debtors to the world. So if you are doing something by paying off the debt which we owe to other people, do you call it help? You take loan from somebody, say bank, and you are repaying little by little. And do you have a right to say, I am a great person because I am paying off my debt? Have you a right to say that? The whole world, we are in debt of the whole world, not only to our parents, but to the whole world. That is why in Vedanta, a beautiful system has come. It is called Pancha Mahayagna, 5 great sacrifices, obligatory on everybody, every human being, irrespective of whether the person is a householder or a monk. What are these 5? It's by our very birth and life. We are indebted to the great sages. We are indebted to gods. We are indebted to our ancestors, parents. We are indebted to all human beings. We are indebted to all non-human beings, including plants and even non-living things. Yes? suppose the beautiful clouds do not give water, you will understand from April 1st, you will understand the value of water. You know what a precious commodity water is. It's just once if this water doesn't, rain is not there, proper rain, see what would be our condition. If the air is polluted, see what would be our condition. If the earth refuses to produce vegetation and food, see what would be our condition. Supposing, you know, Sunday is a holiday, right? Sunday is a holiday. To whom does it belong? To the sun. Does the sun take holiday? Supposing the sun says, this is my day, I will take it off, I will do whatever I live. Do you know what will happen? Day in and day out, the Lord is serving every creature in the form of the sun, in the form of the wind, in the form of water, in the form of this fire, in the form of this earth. These are what Vedanta calls five elements. And out of these five elements, the whole creation has come. And the whole world is helping us, making us survive, giving us knowledge, trying to help our happiness. And in every way, it is the whole world is helping us. What is it that we are returning? How much can we return to the world? So it is absolute blasphemy to say that this world is in need of our help. Not to speak of religious people, which I will come back. Even a secular man like Mark Twain, whenever you feel proud that you are indispensable, make a small experiment. What is it? Take a bucket full of water, plunge your hand into it, and take off your hand. How long does it take for the water to fill up the gap left by taking off your hand? Do you think this world will stop because you and I are not here? It is our stupid egotism which says the world goes on. Next point we have to understand, it is, it's very beautiful way of thinking. Suppose you are hungry. I give you food. What happens? Your hunger is removed. You become a better person, right? Suppose I supply food whole life for you. You will never again go hungry. So, from the state of hunger, you have entered into a state of absolute non-reliance upon anything. So far as food is concerned, you are completely free from worry. Is it not? The idea is, if we are helping somebody, that person or that object is becoming better and better and better and better. Look at the world. Has it changed? In the slightest way, you know, how many incarnations, how many sages, how many philanthropists, how many self-sacrificing individuals have been doing good to the world. Equally, how many monsters, how many cruel dictators have been shedding the blood of millions and millions of people. There are sages and there are great sinners. Has the world changed even a little bit? Come on, you are all thinking people. Has the world become a better place? There was a great thinker, Aldous Huxley, and he had written a beautiful essay on progress. It has become a kind of cliche to go on saying, we are progressing, the whole world is progressing. Progress means from a bad state to a good state, from a lower state to a higher state. And he has raised the points. How do we measure? If somebody is sick, he becomes healthy, we know that this person has progressed. Some person understands 2 plus 2 is 4, and then he progressed a little bit, and he can now even multiply 2 into 4. Did I tell you that story? Nowadays we are all dependent upon calculators and computers. You know, in our olden days, you remember those who are old, 2 into 2 is 4, 2 into 3 is 6, from morning till evening, go on shouting, looking at each other and all that in village schools. We could calculate, you know, even two figures, 78 into 88, how much is there? Don't ask me now, I forgot it. We could do that at that time mechanically. Now ask any child, even a simplest addition or multiplication or division, immediately he will have to take out his calculator, right? In the 22nd century, a boy genius was born. And everybody was rushing to have a darshan of him. What was his greatness? He could add 2 plus 2 without a calculator. So his brain was an object of study of the greatest scientists. How could this boy do such a wonderful thing? So, always coming from a lower state to a higher state is what is called progress. How do we measure the progress, that the whole world is progressing? What do you mean by that? So this gentleman had brought 3 points of criteria. What is it? Goodness, happiness and creativity. Goodness, happiness and creativity. Can you say, honestly, the world from a cruel state, from a wicked state, it is gradually progressing towards a state of goodness? Can you say that? Can you say that our ancestors who were 2000 years back, and they are very unhappy people, now we are very happy people? Can you say that? Creativity. What is creativity? It's not creating something. Indians are great creative people. Every couple has 4 or 5 children, you see. They used to be like that. Creativity. Not creating something. It's a new way of looking, making the brain exercise, new way of looking. As I gave the example, you know, this Michelangelo looked at a broken marble slab and used what is called a creative way of looking at it. Instead of asking what I want to do with this stone, he is asking the question, what could be done with this kind of stone? Immediately the stone, as it were, told him, look, you can make a beautiful figure with 2 legs, outstretched legs. David and Goliath, he made like that. So creativity means new way of looking at it. What is new way? New way means always that which brings joy, that which helps, that which conduces to the welfare of the world, that is what is called creativity. For example, if a musician had written a beautiful song which would bring joy to millions of people, that's a piece of creativity. If somebody has painted a beautiful painting which would bring joy, then that is a piece of creativity. Nowadays people have become so crude that anything is a creativity. You know, once a painter, there was a budding painter, and he was trying to enter into a competition. And every time, the first sight, his painting is rejected. But he was a very tenacious fellow. Next year also, he made his painting ready, about to roll it, and immediately his cat fell on it. And he had no time to prepare for another painting. So in disgust, he took it, and it won the first prize for abstract painting. You know, you go on there, you look at it. Recently I visited a devotee's house, and his wife is a painter. So there was a beautiful, or what he said, beautiful painting hanging. And of course I also duly said, yes, it's beautiful. But I couldn't understand head or tail of it. So I asked, what is it? And then the wife smiled, beautiful smile, which also I didn't understand what it meant. The son was explaining to me that the meaning, you have to bring it out from yourself. So I said within myself, for me, the only meaning I can see in it is meaninglessness. So that which brings our joy to our hearts, make our mind harmonious, peace, That is what is called a creative object. It could be as simple as making a cup of tea, or cooking a dish, or a sweet word, or anything that makes somebody else joyful, harmonious, life worth making good. That is called creativity. Do you think the world is making this present state? Do you think really that it is conducive to harmony, joy and peace? Terrible. It is far, far from it. The more we are advancing in knowledge, we seem to be advancing in cruelty and all those things. But that statement is not absolutely wrong. You know why? The world has never changed. There will always be good and evil. For a good person, it's always good. For an evil person, it's always evil. The world never changes. So before going further, Swamiji illustrates this point. The world never changes. So first, I will narrate the story. There was a poor man, and he wanted to become rich. So he asked somebody in his naivety, how can I become rich? Of course, the person who was asked, he was a wise person, he said, given your talents, there is no chance of your ever becoming prosperous. The only way you can ever become prosperous is if you can somehow get hold of a ghost to work for you, then it might help you to become rich. So this advisor told him, there is a holy man and he has mantras. If you can get a mantra and a ghost will come under your control like the Aladdin's lamp and it will do whatever you want. So this man went, fell at the feet of the sage, begged him, pestered him, and the holy man warned him. So do not ask, because if you do not know how to control it, it will kill you. But this man said, no, no, I have lots of work, I can always control it. He got the mantra, he repeated it, and the ghost came and roaring, gave me work. Said, get me 100,000 acres of fertile land, done. And build me a palatial house, done. Bring me all the riches, done. Bring me the most beautiful wife in the world, done. In few seconds, everything is done. You know, jinns can do that. Do you remember the story? There was this 60-year-old couple, and suddenly a jinn appeared to them. I will give one boon to each one of you, both of you, each one. What is your wish? Quick! So the wife said, I had a great desire to go around the world. Give me a first-class cruise ticket. Done. And the jinn looked at the husband and said, what is your wish? I wish my wife is 40 years younger than me. Done. He found himself 100 years old. So if we do not know how to control the ghosts, that will be our condition. So this, whatever the, all the poor man's wishes have been fulfilled in such a short time. Now the ghost is running, give me work, otherwise I will kill you. This poor fellow was so frightened, he started running to the holy man to be saved. You know, when fear comes, common sense flies through the window. He could have told the ghost, carry me to the holy man. So he ran, fell at his feet, and the holy man, of course, scolded him and said, quick, there is a dog lying there, cut off its tail. Immediately cut off its tail and brought it. It was a curly tail. Said, give it to the ghost and ask it to straighten it. And the ghost took it, very carefully straightened it, and put it back. What happened? The moment, have you ever tried it? Take out a curly hair of yours, straighten it. The more you straighten it, the more it curls. Have you noticed it? So how many number of times he was doing, it is again curling again and again. And the ghost said, Swami, you are such a great storyteller, you know. See, I have seen the end of so many people in my life, but this is the, you are the most troublesome master I ever have got. I will make a deal with you. Whatever I gave you, I will let you keep. Because, you know, it used to kill the people and take away whatever it has given, like the 7 bags of the yaksha. The devotees of Ramakrishna would remember that story. So the point Swamiji makes here is, this world is like the curly tail of a dog. It's never going to be straight. What does that statement mean? It means the world will be the world. It will never become a Swargaloka, a heavenly world, paradise. This world will remain a world. And what is the nature of this world? There will be good, there will be evil. There will be light, there will be darkness. There will be friends, there will be enemies. There will be saints, there will be sinners. There will be happiness, there will be misery. No way you can make everything uniform. This world will ever remain world. Why? Because God willed it to be like that. You can't change it. The only way you can change it is by changing yourself. That is the beauty. You change yourself, look at it, like look at the world in a good way, in a godly way, in a holy way, and the whole world is a manifestation of God. Now, coming back to our point, it is not possible to help anybody, first of all. Secondly, we are always in debt, even by the very fact of our birth. So we are indebted to the world. We can never get rid of this debt to our ancestors, to the sages, to other human beings, to non-human beings, to non-living things in our whole life. Because life becomes impossible if we do not depend upon this world. This whole world is an interdependent world by its very nature. Now scientists are realizing this fact that you cannot kill any species with impunity without having some adverse consequences. You know, people used to think these animals is expendable. It doesn't matter, it goes. No, you kill one species of plants, one species of animals, you will see somewhere, somehow, the adverse reaction will come. We may not understand it. Now, scientists are looking at the whole world, at life in a what is called a holistic view, not part by part, not as completely independent part, but as interdependent web. The whole world is WWW. You know what it means? Don't know? World Wide West. WWW. The whole world is interconnected. There is no part of the body, no plant, no animal which is unnecessary and expendable. It is to our great loss. Already we have lost so many species. So what does interdependency mean? Means I cannot even survive without depending upon the other creature. So when I am myself a slave, dependent upon the whole world, is it possible for me to help other people? So what is the best way? By helping other people, we help ourselves. I will give you one or two examples of it. Suppose you are in a theater. You know, every theater has got fire warnings. If there is a fire, do not rush through the door. What do they say? That go in an orderly way. Let the first people walk and then next people. This way, you will minimize the damage. Is it not a fact? So, supposing all the people are following that instructions, but rarely it is people, as soon as they get panicky, immediately everybody, first me, first me, first. Is it not? Excepting in Vietnam. You know, a journalist visited Vietnam before the Americans declared war. And the people were so courteous. Is always, you know, there is a tradition that men first go and after that ladies follow. That was the custom. So after this war, journalist visited Vietnam second time, and this time a radical change. All men were behind the women, said ladies first. So the journalist was surprised. How come such a radical change? So he took one man outside and said, how come this? He said, don't tell to the ladies, you know. These damned Americans planted these landmines everywhere. So ladies first. Me first, me first. What happens? There is more number of deaths and accidents because of that. So supposing all of us follow the rule and slowly walk one after the other, are we doing good to other people or are we doing good to our own selves? There is a better chance of our being saved if we follow the rule, is it not? Another example would be the motorway. Motorway, you know, there is a rule that always follow this, where there is red light comes, you stop there and you keep certain distance from the car in front of you and only at this speed you travel and all that. All these things. And suppose we are all following. Are we doing good to other people? What happens if we all follow the rules and regulations? We ourselves are less likely to meet accidents. It is for our good, for everybody's good, but mostly for my good. It helps me. Whether it helps others or not is another besides the point. So the whole world, if we lead a good life, a moral life, a good life, a helpful life, it doesn't help others. It helps us. Now comes the question, what is the significance of this Swamiji statement? By helping the world, we help ourselves. To understand the psychology of help, we have to understand the psychology of love. Now, we love. What is love? Love is annihilating the difference between two people. In other simple words, love is union. It's not a good word, but this annihilating the difference between two people is called love. So what is the rationale of love? We all love, we fall in love, maybe with few individuals. We love our parents, parents love us, we love our family members, we love friends, we love some people, we love pets, we love animals. It was a very interesting program. You know, Britain is one of the most, what is called, pet-loving nations on earth. You know that? Many people love the pets. Because why do they love? Because they cannot trust other human beings. This is the fact. A pet, an animal, never betrays you. You just love a little and it will love you forever. It is so grateful to you. So, here, you know, there are some people have terrible problems. They love their pets so much that the pets are becoming fatter and fatter and fatter, and they go on suffering. So, you ask the owners, why do you give so much of food and then allow them to gorge themselves and all that? Oh, we cannot help, you know, when the darling looks at you with soulful eyes. I cannot stop giving what it likes to eat. Actually, is it they are thinking they are loving the pet? Actually, what are they doing? They are killing the pet little by little. They are the direct cause of the pet's suffering and this life itself is threatened. Is it not? Anyway, coming back, what is the rationale of psychology of love? How and why? First of all, how? When we are attracted to each other, then what happens is our mind becomes harmonious. When we see somebody, we are not attracted towards all people, but we are attracted to some people, some objects. There is a discrimination. And what happens? What is the psychology behind being attracted? By coming into in contact with this object, with this person, with this place, or with this food, or with this dress, or whatever, a lot of conflict in the mind becomes quietened down. Have you noticed it? The mind becomes less conflicting. Mind becomes harmonious. and therefore we experience a kind of happiness. And so we think, this food is good, this person is good, because he or she brings me happiness or joy or whatever. So that is the psychology. And those objects, those persons, those places, etc., which make the mind more restless, more agitated, more conflicting, we try to keep away from those. You know, some people create fear, some people create disgust, some objects create disgust, etc. So the psychology is, the mind becomes harmonious or the mind becomes disharmonious. So if it conduces to harmony, we call it love. If it is conduces to disharmony, we call it dislike, hatred or whatever, depending on the degree. That is how it happens. But why does it happen? What is the rationale? Why do we love each other? And what do we mean by loving each other? Now I come to one of the most beautiful stories in the Upanishads, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. There was a great sage. His name was Yajnavalkya. And he was one of the greatest knowers of Brahman, both intellectually and also in realization. And at some point, he was a married man. He married two wives. And at some point, he felt that he must devote his whole life to spiritual disciplines. So he was also a rich man. So he called his wives and said that, I am going to renounce the world, become a seeker of Brahman. So I would like to distribute all the wealth I have, and that will see you, your life. You will not suffer from any material discomfort. So if you agree, that's what I would like to do. One of the wives meekly accepted it, but the other one questioned him. There would be no person accepting a fool who would renounce what is desirable by everybody unless he gets something very higher. Who will renounce a higher thing for a lower thing? Everybody will only give up a lower thing for a higher thing. So if you are renouncing the world, you must be getting really something much more valuable than what you are giving up. Yajnavalkya says, yes, that is true. Then the wife asks, if you really love me, then why do you want to give me these worthless, low-value things, keeping the best things for yourself? You must give me what you know to be more precious, more valuable than what you are trying to give me. Yajnavalkya was highly pleased. Not that he didn't want to give. You see, unless it comes from within that I would like to go to God, as one, even if you give, it will be just like water passing off the back of the duck. It won't help. As again, the same rule, unless a person wants to be helped, he cannot be helped. Wants to be helped means he must be prepared to receive the help. You see, every poor man or every stupid fellow wants to be an executive officer. That may be his desire. But if you really make him an executive officer, what happens? You know, in North India, as an ordinary fellow, Gunda, he became a minister. And then he got a car, chauffeur-driven car. And first day, he wanted to drive. He had only seen cars in his life, but he had never entered into one. So, driver was there. Government had provided him with a chauffeur. He told the chauffeur, get into the back seat. And the driver got out of the seat, but stood on the pavement. The minister got angry. I told you, get into the seat. The driver folded his hands. Saab, ye car hai car. Sarkar nahi, jo koi bhi chala sakta hai. This is a car. Any fool can run the government. But to run the car, you need special training. So one must be not merely what one says one needs. One must be prepared to accept and digest it and accept it and appreciate it. So Maitreyi was ready for this. Then comes one of the most wonderful discourses. Yajnavalkya teaches the highest teaching. That is the rationale of what we are talking here, of love between two between human beings or between any two creatures or even human beings and non-living things too. Here is this. Yajnavalkya said, "Verily, O Maitreyi, not for the sake of the husband, my dear, is the husband loud, but he is loud for the sake of the self, which in its true nature is one with the Supreme Self." In simple words, God resides in the heart of each one of us. When a wife is loving her husband, she is not loving, as Swami Vivekananda puts it, a few bodily molecules, dead matter. Actually, this is all dead matter, is what is called Shava. In tantric language, we are all performing Shava Sadhana. What is Shava Sadhana? You know, a tantric practitioner believes at midnight he must visit crematoriums, sit on a corpse, and go on repeating the name of the Divine Mother. So it will be very effective. Because if you sit in a nice air-conditioned shrine room like this and try to repeat God's name, it will come. It will not come. If a terrorist puts a gun behind you, then you will really be Ramakrishna, O Ramakrishna, come to my rescue. So this person was sitting on a corpse, and suddenly it said the corpse comes to life because a spirit, it possesses it and opens its mouth. And by past experience, the scriptures tell us, this aspirant should keep some food material, their khoi and other things. And whenever the corpse opens its mouth, put a little bit of food. It's a nice hint. Whenever your husbands get angry, keep good food by the side and put it in his mouth. First of all, he is very happy. Secondly, he can't talk until it goes. It's really, always keep tasty food. I have yet to find a man who is eating tasty food and getting angry at the same time. So we are all practicing whole life Shava Sadhana. We are carrying the Shava. This body is that corpse. Morning and evening and afternoon, and every time it is opening its mouth, you are giving something. Whole day and whole night, you are only worshipping this corpse. We are all like this. So two corpses are not attracted towards each other. What is it that attracts? It is the God within that attracts the God within the other one. Two magnets, covered as it were, they are attracting each other. This is the most, that is why parents love the children, children love the parents, friends love the friends. All love, the rational of love is, there is the self within, the God within, he is attracting us. He says, come to me, my dear, I want, because it is his nature to attract you. But when you open yourself up, then the God within you is attracted to the God within the other. That is the rational of morality. Why should I be moral? Because I feel one with the other. Why should I tell truth? Because I should not cheat. How can I cheat myself? How can I rob myself? How can I tell lie to myself? Because the other is not the other. It is the my own self, the God within here and there. It is the same. That is the rational. So verily, not for the sake of the wife is the wife loud. So he goes on. Not for the sake of the sons, not for the sake of the wealth, not for the sake of the rulers, not for the sake of the gods, not for the sake of the whole universe, we love the whole universe. One of the most important part of this statement is, we all worship gods. Why do we worship gods? Usually we think, you know, we are in need of some boon, some help, some protection. That's why we worship God. No. You worship God. It is because you are attracted to the real self. Self means it is the same, one and the same. So what happens if we are not attracted to the God in the other? What happens? Yajnavalkya continues these instructions. He is further saying, by the realization of the self, my dear, through hearing, reflection and meditation, the truth that I have taught you will be well understood by you. This truth cannot be understood intellectually. It has to be understood through realization. So he says, first you should hear the truth, then you should reflect on the truth, and then you should meditate upon the truth, and that truth must become one with you. You know how it is. I give an example. Supposing a mother has lost her child and she doesn't know where the child is. The child also doesn't know. Many years later, through some research, the child comes to know that my real mother is somewhere else. And until that time, somebody else is very lovingly looking after that child. Imagine like that. So now the child comes to know who the real mother is. And the child comes, by this time it is a grown-up man or woman, and comes to the real mother. Do you know what happens? Do you think immediately the child rushes forward and then the feeling that this is my mother becomes 100%? It takes time for that young person to get rid of the idea that that person who is bringing me up so many years with great love and consideration, whom I considered as my own, to replace that feeling takes a long time. But it will come. In the same way, to feel that our parents are not our real parents, but God is our real parent, will take a long time, but it will come in course of time. That is the rationale of love. Again, he continues, the Brahmin rejects one who knows him as different from the self. The worlds reject one who knows they are different from the self. The gods reject one who knows that he is different from the self. So what is the idea? So long as we consider you are not God, so long the separation between these two will remain. What is love or devotion? It is that which destroys the separation. How does it destroy? Destroys by destroying the idea that I am not different from you. You are not different from me. Why? Because it is the same God who is within you and within me. This is the rationale of love. That which brings two things together, attracts two things together, is that God is attracting. So what is the rationale of hatred? Its opposite. When we do not see that God, then we go further and further from each other. You know, suppose I don't like somebody. What does it mean? Means as soon for whatever reason, it could be smell, it could be the sight, it could be anything, somehow that object disturbs my mind. When my mind is disturbed, I feel very unhappy. When I am unhappy, the God within me, in the form of happiness, cannot manifest. The non-God in the form of unhappiness manifests. And it is very uncomfortable. So I do not want this condition. So I go away further from this person so that my God can manifest from within me. Now we come to know, we will come back to the point, why Sri Ramakrishna has taught this marvelous truth. He said, you know, one day he was explaining the tenets of Vaishnavism. Three. Name Ruchi, taste for God's name. And serving other aspirant spiritual devotees, fellow devotees, Vaishnava Seva. And the third was Jibe Daya, compassion, pity towards all other beings. The first two, he said, yes, you should always taste the name of God. And second, you should serve holy people, spiritual people. But the third, he didn't agree. He went into an ecstatic state, came back and said, no, no, not compassion. Who the hell are you to show compassion? Towards whom are you showing compassion? No, service to other beings, seeing God in them. Because you see, whatever we do by seeing God in them, that is the greatest service. It is not service, usually the idea is, I am superior, you are inferior. I have something to give you and you have something to receive. You are lower, I am higher. No. Service means, I am a servant. You are my master. You are God. What can I serve you? What can I give you? Because whatever I am giving you is being given by God to me. Funny things happen, you know. Some devotees come with their children to me. And you know, there are some devotees who have superstitions. By giving some money to Swamis, they get lot of, you know, virtue, accumulate lot of virtue. So the parents put a little bit of money at my feet. I call them good devotees. But they are not satisfied because they think their children are not getting the virtue. So they give a little bit of money to their children, put at the feet of Swami. As I also say, yes, put it at my feet. What is the point? The point is, you see, they must get virtue. Who is giving that money? Whose money is that? It is the parents' money only. The children have no money. It is the parents only who are giving that money and saying, you put it, instead of directly putting it at my feet, it is rooted through the children. Now the whole point is, what can you give to God? What is it that you can give to God? It is nothing. Whatever you are, that is given by God. Your body, your mind, your property, your everything, your intellect, your mind, everything has been donated by God to you. And what will you give to God? In what way you are, if you are taking some debt and then returning, is it a service? Yes, it is. It is service. You know, in Bengal, there was one fellow had taken some loan, some other fellow, and promising, I will return after 10 days. 10 days over, this fellow didn't have money to return. He was roaming up and down. So his friend noticed and says, why are you so restless? Said, you know, I took loan from the other fellow. I have to return it, but I don't have money. Said, foolish fellow. You sleep well. It is for the other fellow to be restless. He should think where from he is going to get his money. So if you are returning what you have taken, is it called service? No. What is service? Lord, this is what you have given me. And I am able to return a little bit of what you have given me to you. Please be pleased to accept it. This is what is called service. This is what Sri Ramakrishna said, that see God in other creatures. Daridra Narayana, Rogi Narayana, a Sikh Narayana, a poor God, the Sikh God, the suffering God, an illiterate God. So this is the way to progress in spiritual life. Not only is it a spiritual value, it is also of value in society. If we do not have this kind of worshipful feeling, then our egotism will come. You cannot continue serving people if you are expecting something. And sometimes what you are expecting, gratefulness or return, will not come. If it doesn't come, then you will be highly disturbed person. This is well known thing, you know. Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar was one of the most compassionate people in Calcutta in those days. And he used to help everybody who came to him. So one day he was walking in the street with his friend. And his friend told, do you know, such and such a person is criticizing you. He thought and said, I do not remember having done any good to him. Why is he criticizing me? You know, if you do not do good to anybody, that person will not think about you, neither good or bad. But if you do some good to some fellow, he will find fault with you. Why didn't you give more? Is the nature of the world to be ungrateful? And many times we are hurt, you know. This is an extreme example. But suppose you have a friend. Who do you think criticizes you more? Tell me. We all have friends, isn't it? Who is it that criticizes you more? A Tom, Dick and Harry whom you do not know, he will come and criticize you. It is your friends who will pull you from your behind, is it not? But if we do not expect anything from, okay, this is the nature of the world. you should be surprised if they are not pulling your legs. You should be very grateful if they are trying to help you. But the idea Sri Ramakrishna gave is, whatever you are doing, you are cooking, cook for your gods. Your husband is your god. Your children are your gods. Similarly, the husband also must look upon his wife, his children, as an opportunity to love them, because he is not loving somebody else. He is loving the God who is within him. He is manifesting his God, his divinity, through the act of seeing God in other people. This is what Sri Ramakrishna or Swami Vivekananda is telling. This whole world is there to help us, to help ourselves. Helping us means what? We manifest our divinity. We realize our true nature by worshipping the world in the form of returning what we have already taken long before from this world. This is the whole rationale of this Karma Yoga, that we help ourselves by helping the world. This subject is very interesting. I will continue in my next class a few more points. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.